Master's Office and Limpopo High Court. That is what we have as the agenda items for today. And we have received documents on time. I thought what I would, in my opening remarks, just to advise you, SIU, that in our first Lekgotla or start plan for the year, we have agreed to make changes to how we work. But effectively, that will start when we come back from recess. We would expect at least documents to be with members at least 1 week before. But that is also incumbent upon us to communicate our program long in advance, because we would want to have members engaging, having time to read the documents, and also our research unit to do the necessary work. And when we come back, also we would set time frames for a presentation. What we have noticed is that departments and other entities that report to us, they make a presentation for 1 hour, 30 minutes, and then there's 30 minutes to engage. It just defeats the purpose. So we'll set time frames for let's say, so that you communicate the most critical issues, because members would have gone through the document, the presentations. And we'll also, when we come back, allow give specific times. Like I think some of you might have appeared before SCOPA, where members would be given a particular time to really ask questions and to get the best out of the presenters. But we thought that every entity that reports to us, when they come, we would alert them. But effectively, we'll start when we come back for the budget vote to implement our program. But also on our side, we would ensure that we communicate on time. No, thank you very much, and you are all welcome. We would head over to your advocacy team for the presentation.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We appreciate and thankful for the opportunity to come and present on the status of the investigations on this three projects. My colleagues that are with me, it's mostly because these are three projects, and most of them are key investigators in this project, so that if there are detailed questions, they could assist in taking those questions. Perhaps quickly in introduction, as my name is Andy Mutiwi, the head of SIU. If you can just introduce yourselves quickly.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Leonard Lekgetho, Chief National Investigating Officer, SIU.
Morning, Chair and members. I'm Segun Berry. I'm a project manager at SIU.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Bulungo Stemele. I'm a program manager responsible for the investigation on state attorney. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. I'm Natasha Nadia. I'm from the Cape Town office for the SIU, and I'm a project manager. And I'm here to be with the, in respect of the Master's Office, the new proclamation which was recently published.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Dumelo Zwane. I'm the Chief Information Officer from the SIU.
Good morning, members and the Chair. My name is Keiza Kanyahu. I'm the Head of Stakeholder Relations and Communications at the SIU.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll then proceed with your permission, Chair. Chair, as I indicated, the presentation will cover, and as presented, it covers our legislative mandate, which we really won't go through. Vision and mission outcomes, strategic focus, which we will really not go through because we have done that several times in this committee. It's really just for background purposes, and we'll do the update on the Office of the State Attorney, building of courts. That's the building of courts, Chair, is the one that the request specifically mentions Limpopo, but it is within the proclamation that deals with the building of courts. So we will present, you know, the status of the whole investigation, and then the Master's Office. As I said, the slide number 3 is legislative and mandate. We won't go through that. Slide number 4, it's the vision and mission. We won't go through that. Slide number 5. Number 5, if I can just spend a minute on it.
Can you page down, please?
Slide number 5. That number 5, you'll see as we present, we will be saying to the committee, we're either referring for civil litigation, we're either referring for disciplinary process, for prosecution, and to other. This is really our method of reaching outcomes. And those outcomes, as I said, they are reached long before we present the final report, just so that departments and action can start being taken. And we also do the systemic recommendation. On the strategic focus, really is to just say to the committee that those are the strategic drivers behind the execution of the new strategy, which really emphasizes on the quick turnaround times, amongst others. So I'll go straight into slide number 9, which is on the investigation of the state attorney. Again, I won't take a lot of time on the background, which includes. Can you please page down as I walk through slide number 10. The matters of the state attorney were reported formally by the former Minister of Justice and the Director General of Justice and the Chief Litigation Officer. Some of the matters were also, particularly around medical legal, because there's an overlap between the medical legals that we're investigating and the Office of the State Attorney investigation. Some of the medical legals were brought to us because we started in the Eastern Cape. By the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Health, we'll present on that, and then matters involving the manner in which we dealt, Office of the State Attorney dealt with claims of the SAPS. We'll cover that part. And this proclamation was published on the 13th of July 2018. It focuses on maladministration, slide number 11, maladministration with the affairs of the state attorney in relation to the legal services that were provided or procured by the state attorney. We have made certain findings there in terms of the process that they follow, and we said there specifically in terms of the procurement that in the proclamation relating to Gauteng Department of Health, Eastern Cape Department of Health, and in respect of claims based on medical negligence. Slide number 12, maladministration in connection with the affairs of the state attorney in relation with the South African police in respect of claims based on wrongful arrest or detention. You'll hear when the investigating team presents that there are really some irregularities in that space. Slide number 13, any unlawful procurement of legal services now, on how the state attorney's office go about procuring their services. There were some irregularities that we found in that regard. Slide number 14, we also look at the irregular conduct by employees of the state attorney's office. And this is across the state attorney's offices. Now, I'll pause here. Just having introduced, this is where the investigation now kicks on. It's been divided into focus areas, and Mr. Lefebvre is overseeing the investigation. With your permission, Chair, I'm going to hand over to him. I'll comment as and when, but he's driving the investigation. I'll allow him to take the committee through the focus areas.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the detailed focus area, we divided the investigation into different areas. And the first one, we look at the top 20 legal practitioners in Gauteng and in Eastern Cape, because the broader mission cover the two provinces. And in considering those, we look at the number of briefs each legal practitioner has received. We look at those that received a lot, and we also look at the payments as shown in the bus system, and we also use information gathered during interview in order to prioritize the top 20 in each province for us to be able to investigate. And the investigation has revealed so far, this is just the highlights, Chair. You'll see in the table reflected here that we decided not to put the name of the advocate based on the fact that the investigation is still ongoing. And you'll see, just to make an example, Advocate A, the nature of matters is collusion with former head of the Office of the State Attorney in Johannesburg. And the value involved that we have identified so far is 34 million. And possible charge that we're looking at is fraud in respect of advance payments, fraudulently hourly rate used, overreaching and overpayments to in claims. And we're also looking at contravention of fee survey of 2009 as approved by the Johannesburg Bar of Advocate. And we're also looking at failure to declare as VAT vendors. And in terms of the referrals that we're doing, we currently preparing criminal referrals to NPA for this particular advocate. And we also refer this particular advocate to the Johannesburg Bar, and his membership has been suspended until finalization of this matter. And we're also going to we have already made a referral to SARS on that particular date. And we're also looking at possible referral of this matter to the special tribunal so that we can recover the amount that has been lost to the state. And Chair, if I may just indicate, if you look from slide 16 until slide 26, those are the same similar advocate with different scenario of the things that they have done. We can also just go to, for example, slide number 17, Advocate B. We're also looking at collusion.
Chair, just to clarify the page number 16 to 26, it is the number of advocates and the findings are similar. So I said to the team that as we present, just so that the committee is aware, you'll see that the narrative is actually the same, although the findings may be slightly different depending on what each advocate or attorney has done. So that's what my colleague is trying to convey. Just so that normally when we prepared, I said we could say slide 16 to 26 deal with advocates and attorneys and similar charges. But we'd like to just highlight some of the matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was just highlighting that you'll see in slide number 17, Advocate B, also we're looking at collusion with the former head of Office of the State Attorney in Johannesburg. And we're also preparing the same charges against him. And we're busy preparing criminal referrals to NPA and also preparing a referral to the advocate to the Johannesburg Bar for the member to either be suspended until we finalize the investigation. That goes together with Advocate C in slide 18 and slide 19, Advocate D.
Just to comment, the highlight on slide number 18. Slide number 18, you'll see, although it's similar findings, but you'll see that, in fact, we've discovered that since this investigation started, it has had a measure of deterrent, you know, on the part of some of the practitioners. As you can see on that note there, Advocate C has offered to the team, we haven't settled or accepted, but he has already offered to the team that he will pay, you know. But if you look at the value of the matter, it's still being quantified. It's unknown yet. But already he comes out and says, you know, whatever you have quantified, I'll be ready to pay. So that's amongst others what we are noticing as we go along. Okay.
Thank you. When you go to slide 19, it also advocate D, you'll see its failure to declare as VAT vendor. And we will be referring the matter to SARS, and we are waiting for information from there. Advocate E, also we're looking at duplicate payments, charges based on the two-thirds of senior counsel, where such charges cannot be justified. And on this one also, we will be referring criminal referrals to NPA, and we will be preparing a referral letter to the bar and possible referral to the special tribunal so that we can recover the money. It goes together with Advocate F, where we're looking at duplicate payments, and Advocate G. I think that's how they go, Chair. They go until slide number 26. Rather than going through each and every one of them, I'll just end there. And when you go to slide number 27, you see these are the SIU medical legal claims matters that are on the court roll for application for rescission of judgment.
Chair, if you allow, if I can give a background to the committee. These, as I said, some of the matters...
Okay. I interrupt at this moment because we are dealing with this matter alone today. Whether members would be happy with dealing with each matter as it is reflected on the agenda, or we allow them to do the whole presentations, then we come. I would want to be guided by the members, because in our agenda, we would first start with State Attorney's Office. We want, after we have received a presentation on the State Attorney's Office, that would want to engage on that, or would want the whole presentation to cover the Masters and the Limpopo High Court, then we have a comprehensive discussion. Honorable Hisham Mohammed.
Yeah, thank you very much. Morning, Chair. My profound apologies. The day started very early this morning with a shooting of a young girl in my constituency, which I had to attend urgently. But not to prolong the issue, I think you outlined already, there are three segments of this presentation, as you understand. The state attorney, then there's the, what is this, court buildings and so on. I think each one are completely different in nature. It will help if you can limit the time of the each one that we ask questions, but limited, so that we can get through meaningfully. Doing all three, maybe other members don't. I have difficulty following. Thanks.
Case, which means we would at this stage ask for members to get any clarity seeking questions on this first one, and then we'll go to the second one, and would expect members not to really to be brief, ask be straight to the point. Are we agreeable on that? Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. We'll complete state attorney and then pause. Thanks, Chair. Slide number 27 to number 30. No, to 29, sorry. These are the matters that were revealed as part of our secondment in the Eastern Cape. As you can see, all of those are Eastern Cape matters. As I said when we started, that the State Attorney's Office is involved in these matters. And when we did the findings, or we looked at these cases, we found that there were irregularities, really. There shouldn't have been this kind of judgment. And our view is that we needed, when we engaged the Department of Health in the Eastern Cape, we agreed that we need to apply for rescission of judgment, just so that, you know, that we can really address these matters appropriately. And it's about eight matters. without going through them line by line, it's a similar basis that we are going to apply for recession. Slide number 30. Thank you, Chair. In terms of slide number 30, we're looking at unlawful contact by employee or state attorney. Even there, we didn't mention the name. You'll see that it's six officials that are involved, and they are particularly involved in irregular settlement of cases. So we are busy preparing the disciplinary referral that we're going to submit to the department, and we're also looking at a criminal referral and also civil recovery so that we can recover the money that is involved. And if you go to slide number 31, it's a list of matters involving other officials that are not necessarily working for state attorney. Here we've got the NET, Department of Health official, and we also have got the Register of the High Court, where we will be also referring some fraud and corruption charges against some of them. And you'll see that the value is still being quantified based on their involvement on some of the matters. And if you go to slide number 32, it's also a continuation of another official, which is official from the state attorney. Then when you go to slide number 33, Chair, it deals with another focus area which relates to the South African Police Service. There we are looking at the legal service that were provided or procured by the state attorney in relation to South African Police Service in respect of claim based on wrongful arrest, wrongful detention, assault, and malicious prosecution. On this one, we have requested information from SAPS. The investigation is still ongoing. We have already received information from other departments, and so we will be analyzing this one. We have received information from Northern Cape and Free State, where we are busy analyzing, and we'll show the table as we go to in the next slide. Here we are looking at the highest paid settlement in terms of some of this malicious prosecution or wrongful arrest, and also some of the matters that are undefended, and some of the police station that has the highest claim. We understand that there's a trend where people arrange with a friend to be arrested. As a result, they put up a wrongful arrest and there's a claim against the subs. The next thing it paid, they share the money. So we're looking at some of those police stations. And in some instances, we're looking at some of the legal practitioners that are commonly used that will tell us that this is some of them that are using. This is how we're going to do it. And when you go to slide number 36, it shows in Northern Cape that in Free State that we have received 2,571 data of all the claims, and we managed to serve them through. In terms of the cases that we have identified that we need to start looking at is 227. The value is 15 million, and there we'll be looking at possible disciplinary, criminal, and recovery in terms of some of those matters. That goes together with Northern Cape. When you go to slide number 37, it deals with the intermediaries. Yes. Thank you, Chair. Just to give a quick background on this matter. Our findings, based on the investigation, is that there is the use of the so-called intermediaries, and without really going into detail, is that between the department, which is the state attorney's office, and the service providers, be it doctors or other in any other party, there's this company or companies that are in the middle, almost like brokers, you know. Rather than the department or state attorney going straight to the legal service service providers, they use these companies, and we've found that there's a whole lot of irregularities here. These companies, amongst others, have not been appointed regularly. They overcharge. There's quite a number of findings. So this next slide deal with those intermediaries, and maybe my colleague can then summarize what the current findings are.
Thank you, Chair. I think we can go to slide number 38, whereby it indicates in the first point that one intermediary has already charged 123 million for service to be purported to have been rendered, and the amount could be more because even now we still quantify and the department is still using the same intermediaries. And the investigation team, we have informed the state attorney that the appointment of these people were irregular, and we are currently busy writing a letter to them so that we can inform them formally that they know about it. And there are a number of instances where invoices were submitted by the intermediaries. They are very vague. They are not even specific in terms of the service that has been provided. So we're still going through that process. In terms of slide 39, it's a duplicate slide. We can skip it. Then we have identified also an outrageous excessive charge by some of these intermediaries. They make 100% markup. You find that the service provider has charged maybe 6 million. They charge the same amount. They put the same markup to the department, of which they have not done anything. So there's a lot that we are uncovering here. And there's a large number of duplicates that we have identified on invoices that have already been paid. They keep on submitting them to the department. And to date, we have identified close to 1 million invoices, and the investigation is still ongoing. The slide number 41 is intermediaries. It's just an example of some of the officials that we have identified from state attorney that were colluding with the intermediaries. You will see the number of we've got four officials there, and the first one, he signed a duplicate invoices of which it amount to fraud, and this first one even tried to solicit a bribe from one of the service providers. This is the one from Johannesburg, and this is the amount that we are looking there, and we are looking at fraud, corruption, and also to recover some of this money from the official. So we are busy with the criminal referrals to NTA and disciplinary to the department that all these four officials can be disciplined based on the amount that is stated that below there. Slide number 42 deals with secondment. What happened is that during the investigation, there were some members that were seconded to the department, that is for Gauteng Department of Health and also to the Eastern Cape Department of Health, so as to look at the medical legal claims. And the slide there indicates the outcome in terms of the secondment for Gauteng. You see that we are currently dealing with 58 files, and if you look at the outcome, you see that, for example, the first line in terms of the table, the plaintiff confirmed that she never submitted any claims against the department, and she never made any engagement with the state attorney or firm of attorney for such claim to be made against her child. So this is some of the things that we're coming across. This is just an example. The third one said the plaintiff confirmed that the child never suffered any fractured injury during birth. These are some of the things that we come across. If we go to slide number 43, this is the secondment outcome in the Eastern Cape. The first one was in Gauteng. There you will see that we 8 criminal cases of fraud to the value of 115 million have been registered with SAPS, and three inquiries relating to fraud to the value of 79 million have also been registered. 3 notices of withdrawal of action and settlement release discharge agreement were concluded, which resulted in Eastern Cape Department of Health incurring savings in the amount value of 45. But more to this, you'll see that the moment we came in as a secondment, a lot of claims started going down because people could see that we are into the department. Below the table there, it just shows some of the matters that we have dealt with in terms of the secondment, the outcome thereof, and some of the cases that are currently in court. And you'll see that we left the names there because some of these matters are currently in court, so they are public documents. You see the first one is a case of Madeira which include Mr. Advocate Nonguba for 15 million. And the charges are fraud, corruption, and we're looking at possible recovery, and also referrals to the legal profession council for the member to be, the action to be taken against them. And you'll see from slide from 43 to 45, it lists all the advocates that we have made findings against and that the criminal case has been opened against. That's slide 43 to 45. I'm not going to go through them.
Just to, maybe just to add through you, Chair, I think if you look at slide 43, there's an attorney there, Nonguba Incorporated. The name features on several lines. And the amounts, you can see the, you know, coincidentally, they are all 15 million and above. You know, it's almost like a trend, you know. But that attorney, we've already given evidence to the NPA, and he was arrested. And he appeared in court, and he was given 80,000 rand bail. But funny enough, after he was released on bail, he phones the sheriff in Gauteng demanding the payment of other claims. And when we looked at those claims, they are also similarly on the same basis fraudulent. So we worked with the sheriff. Fortunately, the sheriff became aware of our investigation, notified us, and we worked with them so that the payment can be stopped. So that's part of the results that we have reached in this matter.
Thank you. Slide number 46 deals with the former head of the state attorney in Johannesburg. As it is known that the matter has been referred to the special tribunal, where we preserve, we managed to get the preservation for his pension not to be paid up, because there's pending investigation against him on several matters. This is just to highlight, Chair, just to indicate that the investigation is on track and everything is going well. We are anticipating that the...
just a bit. You have Nonguba here and all of Jobert attorneys.
Yes.
And then thereafter, the attorneys, the other attorney does not have a name, is Attorney R and Attorney S.
Yes. There, what happened is they have not been criminally charged. Okay. That's why we decided to withhold. Yes, we did. That's complete the state attorney investigation.
Honourable members, that is the first presentation on the state attorneys. Do we have any comments? Honourable Hisham, Honourable Rittenbach, Honourable Jelle, and then Honourable Janji. In that order.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me, at the outset, just thank also the unit for the work in progress that has been done. Obviously, one is not only shocked and to the degree of and the intensity of the collusions that have taken place or is taking place. I can add, maybe it's still happening. We note, of course, the extent of the overcharging of identified intermediaries, the apparent collusion of the number of officials and state attorney, even registrar, and more concerning, possibly a judge. The fact that payments were apparently made in the name of claimants who doesn't even know about it. Question is whether there has been referrals of misconduct to relevant professional bodies, because I believe that this would be an ongoing process. I understand your investigation is not completed, but certainly there should be notification that you are busy with the investigations. Maybe you want to elaborate on that, because there's a number of advocates here. Has that happened or not? That same applies to the officials at various in the department in particular. Then, Chair, I've noticed, and we were advised also, in the notes I've got, that the amendment of the proclamation on 12 July last year, was to further extend the period, naturally, so as you pointed, explained, but also the substitution of the schedule. Now, does this amendment limit the scope of the investigation, bearing in mind that there's a time frame, because everybody's waiting for, you're under pressure from South Africans. Does it, however, limit the scope in terms of what is it, how the Health Department and the State Attorney, or not? Because obviously, if information gets to you, what do you do with it? Just because it's not in your terms of reference, does it mean you're not doing it, or does it go under the ordinary course of other teams investigating? Then, Chair, the concern, of course, is also supposed not the SIU, but that there would be interim some kind of update to the executive, the concerned entities of departments, so that they can take immediate measures in the meanwhile, if there's something formal, communication, like you communicating to us here today. As I sit here as a former official, I immediately think, I hope there's a range of directives that have gone out in terms of the way we pay, decision making on the chain, who approves, what are the checks and balances on that approval. In the past, those were all there, but despite that, as you pointed out, there's this glaring, but there's also systemic, general compliance, which was easy to bypass, and whether you have communicated that, and then lastly, also to the Treasury in particular, any shortcomings there from a financial perspective. Whether that's in your mandate, I'm not sure, but you may want to elaborate on that. Thank you.
Honorable Glenys Breytenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must say that I'm absolutely horrified. We all knew that the problems were big, but and this is quite breathtaking and disappointing. We've been complaining about problems at the State Attorney's Office for years. This committee, civil society, attorneys, everybody's been complaining about the Office of the State Attorney. Judges, nobody's done anything at all. In 2014, Judge Bertelsmann already expressed the hope that someone would do something. Of course, nothing was done. In 2016, the Public Service Commission made certain recommendations. Do you know if those were ever implemented? And if they weren't, are you having a look at why? You mentioned Mr. Zakavi and Mr. Kaji as two culprits who clearly have a case to answer. Have criminal charges been laid against them, and if not, why not? Mr. Mohammed has already asked about the referring of the matters to the professional bodies, and that cuts across all your presentations. Have these matters been referred to the professional bodies? Do you liaise with them? Do you know if they're doing something about it? All of these people must surely be suspended and taken out of action until these matters are finalized. The scale is just staggering. If you just add up the numbers that you put here, it's a staggering amount of taxpayers' money that's just being wasted. I'm not entirely sure how you're going to explain this to the South African public, how this happened. And then, this is a huge amount of work. How does the SIU propose to cope with it? Just these three things, and this isn't all you have to do. You're reporting on three very specific issues today. But this is enough to keep you busy full time. How is the SIU going to cope? Do you have sufficient resources? This isn't something that the SIU can do on its own. You need cross-cutting cooperation with the NPA, with the police, with asset forfeiture, SARS. For the FIC, are you getting it? And have you got a sort of a task team set up to deal with it? And you must tell this committee, really, I don't see how you're going to cope. I have some understanding of what this involves, and the amount of work is mind-blowing. I don't know how you're going to manage. Your office at the moment is not sufficiently resourced. That's very clear to me. And how are we going to beef up your ability? Because this is not going to get better, it's going to get worse. And you simply, I mean, the people in this room, I look at all of you and I know that you can't do it. And that's not because you don't have the ability, but you just don't have the resources. Something is going to stop somewhere and you're just not going to be able to finish it. So I think we need to look at a different way of dealing with this. And you should suggest to us how we can help you do that. But this cannot be dealt with in a conventional investigation, prosecution, conviction, go to jail kind of thing. It's just too huge. There's got to be a task team kind of effort, and you need to tell us how we need to help you to do that. Do you have the forensic capability to deal with these issues? You need huge amounts of expertise here. You need forensic accounting capabilities. You need cyber forensic capabilities. How? Where are you going to find these resources? And how are you going to cover those costs if you have to outsource them? Because we all know what that costs. So I'm really worried about the ability of the state machinery, not only yourselves, but the state machinery to deal with these issues. I don't believe that it's properly resourced, sufficiently resourced, both financially and human resources, to deal with this. I'm not sure the country is sufficiently resourced to deal with it, but anyway, I would like to hear you on that. And then, clearly, if these matters all go into the NPA, they're going to be swamped. And they're really getting swamped from every other direction. How are you going to deal with a backlog that's got to develop here when they have to deal with these cases? Who's going to do it? I mean, at the moment, it's just not possible. You can produce wonderful work and you can send it to them, but what are they going to do with it? You can't answer this question, and I'll ask Advocate Pretoria when she comes here. But in the interim, have you got a plan in place with them about how they're going to prevent a backlog building up? Because this is frightening stuff, really. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honourable Breitenbach, Honourable Just my apologies. My apologies.
It sounds similar.
Honourable Jayla, don't focus on Honourable Breitenbach.
Hey.
She has had her chance.
No, I was just saying that.
Yeah, don't focus on her.
Thank you, Chairperson, and then also thank you to the team for the presentation. I think I'm going to echo also the concern or the views of, I don't want to mention her because she will think that maybe I'll copy it from me. Yes, that in reality, Chairperson, the problems are deeper than what we are having now. I think this is just the report, but I think that the problem is very deep and something has to be done. And also, I will also really support the my colleague here. We want to know if maybe the recommendation of the PSC, how far we with the implementation, the department's implementation of those recommendations. But also, Chairperson, because some of the issues my colleagues have already mentioned, I just want to find out about, because from the presentation, I can just only get the issue that, for example, you are going to make referrals to the NPA, and most of the issues here, you still talk as if most of them, in terms of these officials and advocates that you are investigating, that you're still going to refer those issues to the MPA. So I'm not sure if maybe at the moment how much work have you done that you think you will be able to complete this in time, because I'm looking at, you're supposed to also be submitting your reports to the President. And you are saying your deadline is the 30th August. Will you be able to meet that deadline in terms of this? Because I'm also looking on the issue of subs. What is the your relationship with subs that will make you to be able to receive information like the data that you're looking for? Your relationship with them, if you can say something on that one. And then also on the advocate C, you are saying this advocate has admitted that he's guilty, so he promised to pay something. So I just want to find out, in that case, this person has already indicated that he's guilty and admit, why do we have to, because he just has to go to jail and then, you know, court, and then he must go to jail. Why do we have to waste time on this one and try to negotiate with somebody who has done wrong? And he's admitting now because he's found. If he was not found, he was not going to come and say, no, I'll pay this amount, make those proposals. So I think also you're mentioning the officials. You're saying the officials that are involved in these things. At what level have you maybe investigated? At what level? Because in within the department, the officials are at some level. At what level? Are we saying even the cleaners, for example, they're involved in this? Because from where I am, I'm feeling very, you know, scared that this corruption, it's deep. So can you also tell us, for example, at what level these officials that you are referring to here, if the advocate can be so corrupt, then the community is in trouble. The issue will be taken up with the chairperson to assist us in order to raise that with the department. Lastly, chairperson, this state attorney's office, I'm sure, because most of the people that come here and report are the senior leadership. It's not the officials at that level. I think I raised this issue even when the department was here. Most of the corruption, this corruption is up until down. And the only person, the report that we get, we just get the face value of the whole thing. I think the officials, something must be done with these officials. I mentioned even before that the corruption starts small, you know, and it grows and it becomes bigger. So now we are dealing with the bigger thing, and those little one where it started, we are still not there. People know that they will never come and report here. They will never come and face the committee, and they are continuing with what they are doing. So in short, I'm saying let me welcome the presentation now, and then we'll continue, you know, engaging on this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable Tafene, Honorable Richard Stange.
No, thanks, Chair. Just a couple of questions or comments to make. I'm already covered by my previous colleagues. I want to start with the horror show that colleague Brayton Love has raised, because I want to add to that part. It's really an appreciation of the work you do, but maybe to answer her question, you need to share with us, which you don't have it in your presentation, but it was perhaps not intended. Given the fact that you're doing your work is increasing in terms of pressure and demand, because I want to make the point that we're dealing with a sick society. This is the gist of the matter, and it's not going to slow down. You would have expected that with a state capture commission in the day, every day like SOPA, that it was going to be a deterrent. It's very clear that thing is not a deterrent. Now, the question I want to ask you to help us with, this is a response you can do at the end, perhaps after your presentation, or if you're not ready to indicate. To answer Honorable Gladys Breitenbach's question, I would have expected that you indicate to us, what are your current backlogs? You certainly, from where you're sitting, you already have gone beyond what would have been in your APP. This thing has broken that envelope. And so you needed to indicate what is the kind of backlog as a result, because every week there's an SIU thing, okay, that is being reported. It's not just a state attorney. Your case of Kanyaho is there. He's become a celebrity more than he was at SABC in the SIU space. So it will be important for you to share with us that, because you know that you see that already, that the work that is coming to us as SIU that we're expected to do, it has become this much. And that in relation, now coming closer to Breitenbach, in relation to the capacity that you have, because very soon the pressure is going to be on you on not doing anything. Very soon. And it will start here with us. But that's our role. We're not going to play on that one. But before we get to that point, help us to understand. Take a journey with us to say, portfolio committee, this is where we are. It seems that the case backlog of what we need to attend is increasing. I'm really interested in that, because once we have that, we'll be able to answer her questions. Whether you have the capacity, but beyond that, exactly, it's an extraordinary kind of intervention of coordination and collaboration with other institutions. So based on that, you'll be able to then chart and say, this is how the kind of hotline we worked with SAPS, with NPA, beyond ordinary way of working with us, that we would want you to come to you, not when you call us, but when the issues are raised. So it suggests that the way it is coming, we might need to really have that. But also, I like this point, I always raise it, accompany that with your own risk register. You know, as you're sitting there, what are the risks of some of these things not happening? You've not shared that with us. I'm interested in that. But in any action you do, there are always risks. Risk here could be your capacity, but it could be the other role players that are not playing, that are not getting onto the stage. And therefore, it's sketch at Pelelang. So I'll be interested in that. I'm not sure if you perhaps you can share that at the end, but in a very comprehensive way, because everybody else has hope on you. So the president signs this thing, but SIU is going to do this, and we can see others. They go. Some fail beyond your space, somewhere else where things are not happening, and so others have already declared this is a year of overalls. And in that space, you're critical. But let me leave that. The next point, Chair, I wanted to raise, specifically now to this, was that was more of a cut-across general point. Obviously, at this point in time, you don't have that. What is this projected, the projected conclusion of these cases? Just the ones you have presented to us. Do you have a sense? At an SIU level, at what point would you say this case is concluded? I think we need that chart to understand before it goes, as you deliver it to go beyond you. I think you've made a proper analysis, which I will pick up, because the findings that you presented really are the same, which indicate a syndicate pattern. But that's what it does. You couldn't come to a different finding, because the pattern is that of a syndicate who are doing things. If you look at Nongoba, it's 15 million 93. He was so comfortable in what he was doing. that the predetermination of what he wanted was there. But I'm also interested, yes, we have advocate A up to advocate G, official A up to official G, and so on. I'm interested beyond them. I'm interested beyond these. I'm interested beyond the masters by commission or omission. I don't know if you follow what I'm trying to say. I'm interested in those by commission or omission. And I'll come to that, because my first question is, before you got in, do you have a sense now how long did this take before it was detected? Because the issue I want to raise, it was, this says a lot about leadership, not only the state attorney's office, leadership in the Justice Department. This is where I'm going. Both in the executive authority as well as in the administrative authority. But it depends on you answering that question, how long did this exist before it was detected? Because I will be interested, when you conclude your work, to point us to, because the root causes are not necessarily perhaps how ferocious this advocate was, to indicate to us what will happen to that official in the department whose job was to monitor all of these things. Is that official getting scot-free? What is happening? And maybe at this stage you don't have that, but I'll be interested in that, so that it really covers. Chair raised with you our threat plan, but did not necessarily give you details. One of the things in our threat plan that we raised was, as a focus area, the issue of litigation across. Last week we were having a correctional services meeting with an item on litigation, because the similar trend happens there in a different way. So you've got syndicates there as well, and in terms of this and that and so on. And so that is going to be our standing focus as this committee, in whoever we meet with. My few last points, Chair, to ask from you is, it's not here. It would be good, perhaps when you conclude your work, to share with us what is your comprehensive recommendation to go beyond the symptoms. Otherwise, if you don't do that, it means you must do this work every day. This is pointing to some failure somewhere. What is that recommendation that you'd want to put forward? And that links up with what Advocate Breitenbach was raising. So let me pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. What really stresses me is that is the involvement of the legal profession. I think a month or two ago, I watched Nkepule Mabuse's program, how people have been, in fact, money has been siphoned out of them by attorneys. Maybe it's something as a committee we should look at it going forward. But you can see this trend here. Because I don't think that, I think it's possible that some of these law firms are not only siphoning money from the state attorney's office. But I think maybe I might have made a mistake, because I was reading this document late yesterday. There is a possible implication of a judge. I'm not whether in the Eastern Cape, whether I read it correctly. Then if it is correct, will the Chief Justice, is the Chief Justice aware of it? But I think we will be talking about the way forward after we have received all your presentations. So there were questions asked by members, Advocate Mtibi and Otim.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Honorable Isham, the referral to the professional bodies. As you can see, the referrals happens on an ongoing basis. And the approach we take is that we satisfy ourselves that there has been a professional misconduct where we have collected evidence, because part of our referral is to refer the evidence. But we take into account the members' view that perhaps we should also consider, even before we complete the collection of completed evidence, whether there's a basis to refer these cases to those professional bodies, identifying the professionals and possibly recommending a suspension until the completion of the investigation. There's probably merit in doing that, because the approach we took was, we should have complete evidence, and if you like, in this other case where the suspension has been where the membership has been suspended is Advocate A, we have referred, but that assumes that we have had sufficient evidence to refer. So in all others, the investigation is still going on. While we complete, and then we will refer. But we do take into account that perhaps there's merit in notifying the professional bodies that Professional X is under investigation for these allegations, and possibly recommend that they take action at this stage, probably just the suspension. We'll consider that. Amendment of the proclamation. Yes, the proclamation was amended. In fact, it didn't limit the scope. It actually widened the scope, Honorable Isham. So we had an approach, because as you know that our investigation is really scoped by proclamation, and then there was this issue where we had to focus on other practices and in other provinces where we had to have the proclamation amended to assist the investigation in covering a wider scope. So it didn't limit the scope. Referral to the executive authority. We do referrals to the accounting authority, which is the DG, and from time to time we brief the executive authority, which is the minister. Already, because we have realized, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that the procurement of the legal services was done on what we have found that is an irregular basis. There was no process followed, and there was no procurement framework. There was no procurement process on the part of the state attorney, right? So we then immediately, and that was done sometime last year already, to say the department has to regularize the way the state attorney procures the service, because the irregularity will then persist, will then go on and on. So what they have done so far to put controls in place is that they have now put some process in place. And I think they are going on a quotation basis. But they've put some process in place to say if Department X want to get a legal service, they then go out on a some procurement process, which includes quotation basis. So we have already recommended that, just so that they regularize that process. We haven't up to date, referred to this Treasury, but part of our interaction, because we are aware that the Treasury is busy with the new procurement framework, we are formally going to engage with Treasury on what we are observing across the board in terms of the procurement irregularity. And not necessarily only in the state attorney's investigation, in all others. You'll hear on the building of the courts. So we would like to engage with Treasury and say, take our observations and our experience into account in terms of how is it that as government we can deal with the procurement process. So we will input into that new procurement law, which is the procurement bill or procurement framework, just so that we can address that. Honorable Breitenbach, the PSC recommendations, I just checked with the team now. It looks like we have not looked at that report. So we will, with immediate effect, get to that, because we do engage on an ongoing basis with PSC, but on this one we need to be open. We have not looked at it, but we'll make sure we look at that. How is the SIU going to cope? This is, I think, honorable members, the observations are accurate. If we don't deal with our resourcing capacity, we are going to drown. And we are then going to lag behind and not deliver. We'll be faced with non-performance issues. So last year already, when we determined that the proclamation number was increasing. In fact, as we sit, the pity we don't have that slide, but we can send it through. We have done some numbers. We have determined that the increase of proclamation as of last quarter was 78%. 78% increase. So it's huge. So then we said, as management, I said, no, if we don't do anything, we are going to be told that as managers we are supposed to be anticipatory. We need to anticipate so that we are able to take action. So what have we done? We have now looked at our MTSF numbers. So we have now replanned our resourcing plan. We've proposed to move forward the resourcing in the outer years, 2021, 22, 23, we're going to move some of those resources, appointment of those resources forward. It's got budgetary implications. We've calculated that. We should be able to get more resources with the budget that we have. So we have submitted that to our executive authority. We're expecting sign off any time, in which case we can immediately go out and recruit. What have we done again as a measure of control? And quite correct, Honorable Breitenbach, that it normally is an expensive route. We have gone out and put a panel together of various service providers so that where there is really a dire need, and we have experienced that dire need in some of the investigations, where we have had to get project managers, let alone specialized skills. We have even had to appoint project capacity from that panel. So it helps us. For example, in the Transnet space, we've had to get that capacity. It is the only investigation up to now where we have had to beef up project management, right? So that has helped us to reach some positive results. So in this one, because we can see as we sit here, the reports of allegations are coming in almost on a weekly basis. So even though we indicate the date of the submission of the presidential report, because it will probably still be ongoing. That may just be an interim report, which indicates what have we done so far and what still needs to be done, because we can't leave the other matters unattended. If we need to amend the proclamation again, we will do so, so that we don't leave allegations uninvestigated. So we have presented our resourcing plan, revised resourcing plan, which takes into account the kind of resources that we would need. So while that is the resourcing of SIU in various aspects, yes, it includes forensic accountants, cyber security, cyber investigations. It also involves forensic investigators and forensic legals, because what we have observed is that, you know, our environment deals with legal outcomes, and before a legal outcome is sent out, it goes through quality assurance by the forensic legals. You know, so if that space is also not capacitated further, we are going to struggle. So that revised resourcing plan includes all of these, because I've said to my colleagues that as we sit today, we only have three forensic accountants in the whole organization. It's not enough. It's not enough. That's right. So what I've said to my teams, that, you know, the way, and not only us, HOCS, SIU, NPA, we are expected to trace the money, where the money has gone to. Okay? So we need this forensic accountants. So up to today, we have done a lot of, you know, quantification, and hence some of the matters we are able to action. The forensic accountants, although they are stretched, they're doing their best with the resources that we have, but we are going to increase those resources. I mean, an example is that, and this is probably in every investigation, but particularly in the SOEs, where if you give the team a balance sheet and saying, interpret the balance sheet so that we know where the money has gone to, you know, we need super skills, super accountant skills, but we have already identified that part, and we are acting on it. So an interaction with other law enforcement agencies, we do have that forum where we interact with HOCS, NPA, and it's under the ACTT umbrella, and it has, I know, it has shown that it works. You know, with the ESCOM investigation, for example, we've really put to test the interaction that we have with these other agencies, and it has shown that it works. So that is the model that we'll probably use in various other projects, including this project. We have, correctly so, we sign up on referrals to NPA almost weekly, right? And that just builds up on the backlog. We have been on record as saying we are engaging with the NPA, we want to see our matters acted on, and so on. And up to now, we've engaged with the current National Director of Public Prosecution. What we have received is an assurance that the matters will be prioritized. So if there's a model that we can really engage, and I know that in various projects, they do provide prosecutors, you know, to our projects, but I know that there's sort of resourcing going on that side as well, you know. Yeah. So, and with SARS as well, we have engaged with the current SARS leadership. We are seeing an improvement in terms of the interaction with them. Honorable Jela, the problem is deep. I think from our experience, we concur with that observation. But again, it comes with what is it that, as SIU, having observed all of this, what do we do in relation to the accounting authorities, executive authorities? We do, even before we complete the presidential report, we do make recommendations in terms of really what is it that, in our view, needs to change, what are the controls that we need to put in place. So we are, as we go along observing the inefficiencies, we do make those recommendations. How much work have been done to refer matters to NPA? Yes, as our records indicate, but I think it's important. We really don't show the timeline, and I've said to the team, we need to be able to say, you know, when are we going to make these referrals to NPA? I know we, in that column, in that extreme right, we make possible referrals. I'm on the team as we speak, so that we, they've got some that have, you know, are underway, but what happens is they prepare a bulk referrals. So those bulk goes through the governance process and they're checked by the lawyers and so on. So I think we need to release them just so that action is taken as quickly as possible. Advocate C undertook to pay. Yes, that is the information that's with us. As I indicated, even with all these other medical legals, we have experienced the withdrawals of certain claims once we have got in and, you know, started acting. But again, my observation, as I said to the team, that you know, I hope it's not the case, but more often is that people would admit the guilt just so that, you know, you circumvent some of the other processes, right? I hope it's not the case in this one, but we will make sure that even if there is an admission or some payment or whatever, because we don't just take the payment without engaging with the state attorney and so on and seeing whether it's appropriate or not. So we would like to have a situation where other processes are not circumvented. Like, you know, I offer to pay and then you don't report me to the professional. No, we don't want that. We don't want full and final settlement issues yet, you know. So we will still make sure that those, and it's not only for this advocate C, it will apply across. At what level are the officials? I hope I know you've got that information. You can come in with it. Just make a note on that. Let me proceed to answer where I can, Chair. Advocate, Honourable Janji, the current backlog, I think I've covered that part. We are satisfied that if we don't act and make sure that we are resourced, the backlog is going to be huge and we are really going to be found wanting, and we don't want that. Collaboration with other agencies, I think I've covered that. The issue around the registers, risk registers. Our risk team is conducting, together with investigation teams, I've said to them that they must do project risk assessments. So we should be, even if it's required, we can send over the project risk assessment for these two projects. But otherwise, we are conducting it across the project so that we are aware what are the risks. The main risk that comes out is the resourcing, right? And then obviously there's other risks. The year of the yellow overalls, yes, we play a very big role in terms of contributing to making sure that there's consequence management, whether it's criminal prosecution, civil litigation, and disciplinary actions of the members, of the officials that are guilty. We put all of this under the umbrella of consequence management. We would like to contribute and make sure that there's consequence management across. Projected conclusion, the need for a chart. We've got the what we call letters of engagement with, in this case, with the Department of Justice. That letter of engagement has got timelines, specific timelines, so we can probably just package that and then send it through. We just projected the presidential report, but there's a number of timelines in between where we're going to conclude. We agree that there's syndicate patterns, and we are working with in various other projects with the Hawks, because we've seen some criminality along those lines. If there's syndicates or in brackets, gang star approach, we need to make sure that we include the Hawks so that we work together to deal with that, and we are already doing that. yeah, the issues around the acts of omissions and commissions. Yes, we do also will once the evidence is collected, we will ensure that we pick up on all of those who did not do what. In the scheme of things, and what I have said to the teams now going forward, and we started like almost a year or two ago, that there was a perception that we're letting, excuse the language in brackets, the big fishes to let go, you know, to scot free, and then we're focusing on the small. And this was across the law enforcement agencies. But I've said to my colleagues in the investigation teams that as we investigate, we need to go up and down. Okay, let's look through the chain, the decision chain, starting from the accounting authorities. What role did they play? Accounting officer, what role did they play? And officials down, because more often the focus is on the team. Either bid adjudication committees and or the committees, and we don't go up. But we have now there's indications in other state institutions where we have taken a decision to act against board members. So that was the implementation of that approach. So we take that into account. Honourable Janji will continue to do that. How long this existed before it was detected? My colleague, the proclamation has got timelines in terms of when it starts and when our investigation has to focus. But correctly, that this problem would precede the timeline when the proclamation starts. Right. So we need to make sure that we take that into account. If need be, we then have to, you know, make sure that with the department, if need be, we get the amendment to make sure that those others dating way back are looked at as best we can. The issue around the litigation, we would like to also beef up our litigation capacity. Because, Chair, as we have said before, this is the process in SIU that we've got end-to-end control on. This is our niche. This is what we must really show results on. And hence our observation that the delays in the ordinary courts, hence the establishment of the special tribunal, but we would like to maximize the use of the special tribunal. Our legislation gives us the legal standing to appear. Our members can appear there rather than going through state attorney and, you know, appointing counsel and so on, but we're not there yet. But we are building up immediately so that we are able to speed up on the litigation part. And on this one, I'm engaging with my counterparts in HOCS and NPA, particularly Investigative Directorate, and other agencies like Public Service Commission and so on. Because the special tribunal is there, all government agencies must maximize the use, because it's going to give us the opportunity to recover and recover quickly. But because our legislation says the special tribunal can only deal with matters that emanate from the investigation of the SIU, we have to engage and make sure that we give it the legal authority that it can. Because just an example, if HOCS makes an investigation on an irregular tender, they will run with the investigation and come to a finding that there's a criminality, and then they will run with the criminal investigation, prosecution. But then I ask, what happens to the civil litigation leg? Because there will be a need that contract has to be declared or attacked. So the answer that I got is that they referred to the state institution to take that litigation process. So immediately there's a bit of an issue there. So we would like to improve that space, because more often when you refer it back to the same state institution which you have pronounced that, you know, they've conducted irregular tender, you know, there is a possible inaction in terms of that. So we are trying to arrest that situation so that we can make sure that we maximize on the use of the special tribunal and the involvement of SIU. Comprehensive recommendations, we do those, and in fact we really want to step up now in terms of ensuring that there's fundamental changes positive to ensuring that there's improvement. In this state attorney process, we've identified several inefficiencies which we will recommend to the executive authority and the accounting authority officer so that there are changes. We know that there's processes to establish the Solicitor General's office. As the department builds up on that office, they need to take into account the inefficiencies that we have observed in this investigation so that they are attended to. The involvement of legal profession, Chair, we share the concern that it's very unfortunate that there is this scale of involvement of the legal profession, but also other medical profession as well, and all other professions that are involved, and we would like to make sure that they are all attended to. Money siphoned from public by attorneys, I think that one it's also an observation we've made. Chair, you are correct that part of the investigation in the Eastern Cape looked at the officials of the state attorney's office, the registrar of the courts, and there's also evidence that indicates to a judicial officer, but at this stage we've said we need to make sure, and we took a similar approach, that once we have collected evidence, we should be able to engage the Chief Justice, but we'll also engage our executive authority, so that part will be referred to the Chief Justice and Judicial Services Commission. I want my colleague to come in on the level of officials and other questions that you may have to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the official, they range from all the official. We don't want to give it away because we haven't made the referral at this stage. But we find that most of them are involved in the Office of the State Attorney, particularly looking at the two offices that we are currently looking at.
Question asked by Honorable Jelle about meeting the deadline of the 30th of August.
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated, that the 30th of August, given the magnitude of the work, the 30th of August will probably be an interim report. It will probably be an interim reporting stage, because we don't want to circumvent and short-circuit the investigation. So we will still be issuing a report on the 30th, but it will be an interim report, so that we are able to show progress to the committee and to the executive authority, and also submit it accordingly. So that part will be dealt with on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we still have something to add? Okay. Can we now go to the Master's office?
What is your average cash flow per investigator currently?
When we did the capacity assessment, we have found that as we speak, each investigator is probably allocated to two or three projects, and these are just projects, and by projects we mean under a specific proclamation, but within that project there may be, you know, a number of investigation focus areas, so it's not ideal. But at the moment, we find that they are as stretched as about
to three projects, and it's quite heavy.
No, honorable members, I think we are getting the information from the SIU. We still need to have time, not today, to deliberate, because we must answer the question what kind of support we should be giving to the SIU. It is not the end of it. We are just getting the information so that it can assist us when we deliberate on these matters, because they are quite serious. Because I noted that there is also an advocate that was earning 66,000 rand a day, every day, excluding Saturdays and Sundays, for 3 years. And so I think the problem, I think what we have been able to do is, I think we have done a very good job. And it really shows that the problem is deep. And we should also look at, this is just Gauteng and the Eastern Cape mainly. And what about Durban and other? So I think the problem is much more deep, and there is a possibility for us as a state to get a lot of money back. So what is needed is that you need to spend in order to get the money. I think that is more the problem, where the problem is. But I think we would have a discussion as a committee, honorable members, to say what really we need to do. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree that we need to have a discussion as a committee about what it is we need to do, but we do need all of the agencies, the SIU and all the others, to tell us what they need. And so I want to suggest that since we have had this to prepare, and I'm sure all of us have read it, that we don't trawl through it in any length, but we engage on it. We all have questions, I'm sure, on the other two issues.
I would prefer to
engage and ask questions and then find out what it is we can do,
yes,
than to have them read from a presentation to us, which we've already read.
So you are referring to the Master's Office,
yes,
in the Limpopo?
Certainly.
That's correct.
And then also, I want them to think about, please, when they tell us what it is they need, what effect this has on their staff. Because to be in charge of three proclamations of this size will kill you. You'll have a breakdown, you'll go home, the staff cannot be put under this kind of pressure. And what they have is those that haven't yet been headhunted elsewhere. That's all they've got. They're not the best, with the greatest of respect. The cream of the crop have been headhunted to private institutions. And you can't expect people to function like this. The pressure is too much. And we can't expect people to just keep on producing their people.
I think you will just briefly talk to the Master's Office and the Mpopo High Court so that we can engage.
I'll not go through the mandate part, which is the proclamation. Perhaps I'll ask my colleagues just to say what the progress up to now.
Thank you, Chair. We're dealing with the building of courts, not Master's Office for now. In terms of slide number 54, there we indicate the different focus area in terms of the investigation. Focus area number one is to determine if SCM process were followed in the appointment of the implementing agent, which is IDT. We're also looking at focus number two, to investigate construction of the 8 courts and the acquisition of land in Mpumalanga. We're looking at the malperformance and or no performance by service provider. We're looking at value for money and profiling of officials and service provider. And we're looking at corruption, which is focus area number six. Slide number 53 outlined the progress of investigation. To date, we have collected all agreement contracts from the department and IDT and also payment information. And we have identified key role players that are involved both at the department and at IDT. And our preliminary investigation has revealed the following. The implementation agent on behalf of the department is IDT. And we know that IDT is part of the state entity. And IDT outsources services to a principal agent who is a former IDT official and who is the subject to our investigation. And we have established through interview documentation and site visit that only 4 courts out of the 8 that were supposed to be built were constructed. Slide number 56. The budget allocated for construction of 8 courts was 3 billion. The total spend to date is just over 6 billion, which is almost 100% more than the initial budget, and only for 4 courts instead of 8 that was initially planned for 3 billion. PFMA prescripts allow for 20% variations of the contract amount. If the amount is exceeded, the tender must be readvertised. This is something that we are looking at because the cost has gone beyond the 20%. The construction of the 4 courts never started, of the other 4 courts never started due to budgetary constraint. Variation orders were approved by IDT without Department of Justice knowledge or approval, and that amount to possible contravention of legal prescript. And we have discovered that the amount of 350 million was transferred by the Department of Justice without approval or a contract agreement in place, which appear to be irregular. We are looking at into that. And we are busy collecting the outstanding SEM documents so that we can see how the SEM process were conducted. And the analysis of documents is also ongoing. Interview of official and service provider is also going on. And we have started the process of appointing a quantity surveyor due to the magnitude of the construction work in order to verify and quantify the work performed. And we also started with the profiling of identified role players. Slide number 58, corruption investigation also is ongoing. We have done some site visits, and we could be making some criminal, disciplinary, and referral to regulatory authority, and also to refer some of the matters to the special tribunal. And on this one, we anticipate to submit a presidential report in November 2020. General observation regarding to the Limpopo court are as follow. We found that the court is built on a spring. The area is not suitable for building, and when it rains, the area gets flooded. The poor workmanship that is visible, and there is an issue with regard to general maintenance of the building. So that those are some of the observations that you have made so far. The investigation is ongoing. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Well, if you just look at slide 56, which really indicates, you know, a critical problem, a fundamental problem that really indicates poor project management, poor monitoring, and possibly by the IDT, but also would like to understand what was the agreement between IDT and the department. To exceed the budget by 100%, it's problematic, and only deliver 4 of the 8 calls, you know. So we are digging deep in terms of the processes that were followed, who did not do what, again, on both ends. We will do our findings and submit them appropriately. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that is the presentation. Honorable Mohammed, Honorable Jale, Honorable Beckenbach, Honorable Janji. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. We've got just a few points here.
Yes.
Now, on this capital work, this time frames you didn't indicate, but if I can recall, the Bitonga 2012, when this IDT came on board during the fifth administration, or fourth administration, put it that way. Now, the reason I'm referring to that is there any connection with the four courts that were built in the amount that were transferred? Were it for those four courts, or was it a total amount in referring to all the courts? Okay. That's the first question. We didn't break that in the presentation, so I'm not sure. Then, there's only two fundamentals here, which you probably have covered somewhere. And that would be non-compliance, which could have or may have led to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, or and somebody got some kickback somewhere, put it in a populist way. Now, and I assume that's following that more rigorously, the letter in particular. Then your team, I'm not sure, is Treasury on board in terms of, because Treasury could easily confirm the amounts that went where, because these are capital amounts on the vote. Especially when it comes to overrun, 20% variation, so here's 100% variation, put it that way. Surprising. Now, in the one court, I know five court, normally a process, the local management and magistracy request the requisition based on the volume of work and projected work. Then, based on that request, all the mandate gets done, approval at the national level. Now, you may want to look at that. What was the original mandate or requisition as opposed to what was delivered? So if the delivery is double that, then you then obviously something is somewhere wrong as far as approval is concerned. I noticed the IDT concentration. Surprising that they would do variation without following procedures. I'm sure you may want to even confiscate computers as communication in that regard. Just some of my own thoughts around the issues. There's a court, Western Cape, I noticed, which one I know a bit more than the others. But thank you very much. We're looking forward to the conclusion of this particular capital. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mohammed. Honourable Jaila.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I was going to ask on the status of these new courts. Maybe they did you can you give us more information in terms of some of the details in respect of the exactly who is which department is responsible in terms of, did you find out maybe which department, is it infrastructure or are we doing it internally ourselves, so that we can see if maybe these people you are out of order with. No, and it's getting out of hand. I think we must stop it now, Chairperson. Can we? No, when other people talk, Chairperson, no,
we'll
it's really interfering and it's not good.
We'll attend, can we
And lastly, Chairperson, let me just ask the team if maybe can you, I'm looking at the workload and all that, can you, before we sit down for ourselves, they make recommendations for us in giving us the details as to where do you think we can intervene. You put them, you know, in order and say, here we request you to come in, and then this is the blockage, we can do this, we can do this, and then you put it, and then so that when you sit down, at least we're able to focus, have focus areas, so that we don't go all over. So I think that was my only comment.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Sorry, Chair. It disturbed me. I think you'll understand. Last time when they were here, there are other questions that I wanted to find out from you, Chair, because now we have some areas according to how we're going to work. Last time we had some questions that you you gave us your presentation, and there were some other questions that we asked in terms of what we discovered in those presentations. How are we going to get to that? Or maybe we'll have to work out in the next time when they come, we go back and check exactly where we did not get the reports, the answers in the previous, because we still have to refer back and as to the progress so that we're linking what we have been asking you, previously.
Yes.
Thank you, Jay.
No, we'll attend to that. Thank you very much, Honorable Rickenbach.
Thank you. Mr. Matibi, the overrun on all of these courts appears to be double. So 100% overrun. The Limpopo court is falling apart. It's hardly been opened. And yet everything is broken. There's no plumbing, the electricity doesn't work, the lifts are buggered. It cost a fortune. How does this happen? Are you looking at that? And who's responsible for that? Who signed off on payments to these people in a building that, for all intents and purposes, is probably going to have to be demolished? You can't allow prosecutors and the public and officials to sit in the building that's going to fall around around their ears. It's dangerous. I've got no reason to believe the Mpumalanga court's going to be any better. It also took forever to build, and it's probably going to fall apart. How are we going to deal with that? And are you looking at the Department of Justice and who there approved payments for buildings? Like when you build a house, I mean, you pay off at levels and you check the construction. How did this happen? On a budget that overrun by 100%, how do we have a building that is falling over? I mean, is somebody looking at that, and is somebody going to be held accountable? That's really all I need to know about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Petenbach. Honorable Tanji.
No, mine is a quick, a very simple one, which is not going to SIU, but it has to be said at this point. And I'm as you can see, I'm laughing about it. Because the problem here, okay, let me put it this way. Over many years, and I've done that little research, I can't tell you a successful project that was done within budget, within time, by the IDT. I don't have that. So it's amazing for me. IDT can't build a toilet. Okay. Because I know that for a fact. At some point, I was an advisor to an executive authority on the sanitation problems. IDT faltered there in the building of toilets in the rural areas. Now, I can't believe that somebody is carrying IDT everywhere. So what do you expect? Because they are known for doing things outside of timelines. If they complete a project, it's double the amount of time. If they complete a project, it's beyond the budget. It's known. So who continues doing this? Who continues appointing IDT? And it's across the board. I didn't know that they're also involved in courts. Wow, I need to go to IDT. There's something there. Because it seems they are kept alive by being given what they cannot do. So the problem is not an SIU problem here. So it can't be fixed in this meeting, but that thing must be fixed. Why are you closing this thing? IDT, there's no reason for this IDT to continue operating. So I'm just saying, if there's anybody in this room who can share and say, no, IDT did this brilliant project, I would withdraw everything I've said. But in my own little research, I know that institution, here you have a project given to IDT. They outsource because they know they can't do it. So I needed to give them in the first place. That's my only point here that I really want to raise, that there's a bigger problem we must attend, because it is this now, in another portfolio, we might have the same problems, where IDT is involved and creating the same problems. I'm not making a joke when with toilet problems that were not completed with IDT involvement. You take them to court for toilet, didn't it? No, this is serious. Sorry, Chair. Just wanted to make that point.
Very much. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to know that as that court of Limpopo, I want to know their building plan or construction worker, and also I want to know the follow-up investigation about that. And also, I'm shocked about that construction that is building, that's supposed to build the 8 courts in 3 billion, but it's built only 4 courts instead of 8. So I want to know again the other investigation that is taking place. Thank you.
We might need to have a briefing on infrastructure by the department. I think it's quite urgent. Signing 350 million without transferring 350 million without approval or contract management, that is, I don't know how to describe it. I think we would really need them. Over to you, Advocate on TV.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much, and honorable members. The timeline of the investigation, the proclamation covers from 2008. So that's the, and remember, the scoping of the proclamation is based on the allegations that we receive. The amount transferred, the 350 million, for example. Yes, we didn't split it, but my colleague can comment whether it was for a specific court or just the overall amount. Do you want to?
Thank you, Chair. It wasn't for a specific court. It just wasn't an amount for the entire project. And actually, just maybe to answer your other question was, Treasury did confirm that amount was paid. So that's why we made that finding.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, the status of the new courts. I mean, as you can see, that the investigating team went to Limpopo, and the observation is that the poor workmanship is visible, and we are now in the process of getting a quantity surveyor so that we can make informed findings from a scientific basis. Because it is a problem. As Honorable Breidenbach says, is that it's a structural problem. So we'll need to then make the finding and recommendations in terms of what should happen here. But we will be informed by those scientific findings. Which department is involved here? IDT is a... it's a state entity within the Department of Public Works. Yeah. So departments, you know, go to IDT, as the Honorable Janji was saying, they contract with IDT to do infrastructure programs. But in this case, obviously, call it the buying department or the Department of Justice. Right? So to the Honorable Tiffany's question is, we'll need to then determine what are this contractual arrangement, you know, what is the responsibility of the Department of Justice vis-a-vis what they have signed, because they've signed an agreement, right? Yeah, we'll need to say what was the Department of Justice role, and obviously we know as an implementing agent, IDT, what their roles were, and in all this value chain, there are roles and responsibilities, okay? Who was supposed to have monitored what? Honorable Breitenbach's question is, you know, in this, if you use the Limpopo court as an example, right, but it applies across. Who was responsible here, right? And we need to pronounce in terms of who failed to do what, whether it's in the Department of Justice or IDT, we will determine that.
reports of Honorable Chair, I think you covered this one. On the reports coming from the previous presentations, maybe just as an example, we did submit what we said. I think there was an investigation around MSW. We submitted the report. We submitted the report around the performance management system and so on. But that we can still address afterwards. Honorable Breitenbach, who is responsible? That is the question that we will need to answer and answer comprehensively at all levels and in all the departments. This, the investigation team has actually established these maintenance issues comes from the misunderstanding between the Department of Public Works, IDT, and the Department of Justice. So we will do a comprehensive a report on that, because it looks like there's some misunderstanding in terms of who should do what, and that is a problem, and hence this project management issues that we will point out. Honorable Janji, the IDT issue, again we will spell it out in terms of, you know, how is it that they've caused what we are dealing with at the moment. Honorable Tafeni, the project plan, yes, the investigation team, when they investigate, they look at all those documentation, including the, you know, how long was this project supposed to be, because there's, in one of the slides, there's a program that we refer to, I can't recall the slide, but it's a program that was signed in the Department of Justice. So that program included all this build of the courts. So I suppose each one of them should have a project plan, and IDT as an implementing agent should be the program or project manager, so to speak. But then we'll have to determine, you know, if I have outsourced work to someone, I'm not totally freed from, you know, monitoring whether the work is done. I'm just making a comment, but we will determine whose role was what in all this process. Okay, I'll pause there, Chair, and thanks.
Thank you very much. We still have a bit of time. Honorable members, are you all satisfied with that you have asked all the questions? No. Honorable Mohammed?
Well, this is more, and I agree with you, we have to get the department. I'm worried about the consequential management in terms of the maintenance of the all three sites, or what is it for? Because has Public Works taken it over? I seem to have thought that the previous minister announced something. Not sure whether it's resolved, but if it's not resolved with the urgency, whether Public Works have taken ownership of these buildings like it should be in the first place as the custodians of all capital works of the country. If not, we'll have to engage that committee of ministers. Thanks.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Advocate Mutibe and your team. You have really given us food for thought. I think, but there is one question that is still outstanding. I think it was Honorable Jele and Honorable Breitenbach. From the work that you have done so far, where do you need the committee's assistance? You should be having some inclination of the challenges you have faced. Of course, we're not saying that will be there. It's a final request of where do you need our intervention. Yes.
Now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I think the as I said when we did the project risk assessment, the main risk that tops the risk register is the issue around the resources. And as I said, we have done some work in terms of how is it that can be mitigated.
we just don't have the presentation here. We can send it, but that's really the area which we would plead for assistance. But as I said, we're already in engagement with our executive authority to ensure that process is speeded up. And again, in that resourcing, the specific ones that we identify: forensic accountants, cyber, forensic legals, because our work really depends on those kind of skills. If we don't have sufficient of those, with this growth of proclamations, and we don't capacitate ourselves, we're going to find ourselves not being able to deliver appropriately. The other area on an ongoing basis, and I don't want to say it's long term anymore. It's probably short term as well. Our funding model. Our funding model really has to be revised, because if you look at, we do get a certain percentage of grant, and then we charge for our fees. But Chair, and at the next occasion, we'll probably indicate the level of payment of the state institutions. It's not satisfactory, and as a result, we are finding ourselves, being shortchanged. We have checked with other agencies, such as the Auditor General. We know that, that they've even started litigating against state institutions and so on, but it's really not sustainable. So that's the other part. And so that will probably assist in terms of when we do the planning, like on the our chief information officer is here, and we always speak to the IT environment, because we need the tools of work. If we are to be able to improve, particularly around the data, the analysis of the data, because as you can see in the master's investigation, about 253 computers were seized, and they were imaged in 4 days. That's as far as you're concerned, is a very good outcome. But we have had to outsource the imaging if we are to be open with the committee. Fortunately, on the panel that we have put in place, we have anticipated that we will probably need that. If it wasn't for that, Chair, the master's office would probably have been disrupted. So we were able to do that over the weekend and complete the imaging and take the computers back. But the imaging is one thing. There still needs to be an analysis, okay? We still need warm bodies who are experts to do the analysis. We've got I think almost about 3 or so in the cyber space. So all we are saying is that we would need also the tools of work and the expertise to deal with the tools of work so that we can deliver. But we've identified all of that in a comprehensive document which we will send through to the committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much. When I'll be putting back your hand was up.
Mr. Matibi answered my question. Imaging is one thing. The analysis is something completely different. It's fine to have a forensic image, but you need somebody who's an expert to analyze it, and that takes time. And there's no other way of doing it. It takes time. And if you say you have 3, do you mean 3 people?
Yeah, 3 people.
Well, that'll take 10 years.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mtibi, and to your team. I think we are quite happy with the presentation. We understand that it is work in progress, but it is showing very depressing state of affairs, and we would want to really support you to
help us clean the stage. It's important that we really help one another to ensure that at the end of these 5 years, we can be able to look back and say, this is what we have done. Our state will be cleaner than we found it. Thank you very much. You are now released.